This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us on the program today, from the Denver Post, Mike Chambers, to talk about tomorrow's Jets Avalanche game. In the second hour, Jeff O'Neill, TSN hockey analyst, will join us to talk about the Evander Kane situation. And in the third hour, Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst, will join us to talk about the Wild ahead of their visit to MTS Center on Tuesday night. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. A programming note: the final 30 minutes of today's show, we are going to open up the phone lines, probably for the first time in about a year, maybe even longer than that, because typically we're not a call-in show. But the last 30 minutes of the show, we want to hear from you about the Evander Kane situation. Who is to blame, in your mind, for what is happening between the Winnipeg Jets and the player who used to wear number 9 for the team? I suppose in some regards he still does. So the final 30 minutes of the show, 780-1290, will open up the phones to you. Without further ado, I say good afternoon to Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, how are you both doing?
Drew, I'm here just so I don't get fined.
Hasn't that played itself out already?
Drew, I'm here just so I don't get fined.
Fair enough. Thanks for being here, so you just don't get fined there, Ezzy. Richie, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, a surprise entrance by Remus about 10 minutes ago. Sub in hand, so it should be a good one today.
There you go. Remus is ready. He's got his nourishment for the next 3 hours, so let's get started with last night's Winnipeg Jets-Chicago Blackhawks game, a game in which the Blackhawks defeat the Jets by a 2-1 margin, getting an overtime goal from Brandon Saad, and we'll go through each of the goals this segment. To me, though, Richie, and I said this to you before the show, What I think we saw last night was two teams that are very familiar with each other playing a bit of a chess match between one and another to try and get an edge, when really I thought for the most part they were evenly matched for the majority of the 63 and so minutes in last night's contest.
Yeah, Drew, it was a skating game. It wasn't overly physical. I know the Jets led the Hawks in hits, but it wasn't that physical of a game. It was a skating game, a lot of perimeter. The Hawks, I thought, controlled the puck in a little more prettier fashion, I'd say, than the Jets, but that didn't really matter because it was all on the outside for the most part, aside from that Kane goal. I guess it was in the second period.
Yeah, but Patrick Kane goal.
Yes, but aside from that, I thought pretty even game. Scoring chances were pretty similar, and I thought the goaltenders weren't challenged that much. I thought it was a pretty solid game, but it was fairly uneventful.
Yeah, it wasn't the most exciting game, Richie. And, you got the first period fight out of the way, Drew, mm-hmm. with Chris Thorburn and Daniel Carcillo. And I thought that was important because it didn't become a sideshow. I know Carcillo actually played quite a bit yesterday. I don't know what or maybe I'll look it up. It was 10 minutes of ice time for Daniel Carcillo on the fourth line there. So Joel Quenneville was playing him quite a bit, guys. But I thought that, with Chris Thorburn dropping the gloves with Daniel Carcillo, that sent a message to the rest of the team, based on what happened a couple weeks back before the All-Star break with Matthew Perreault, and he stuck up for his teammates. And a couple of other times during the game, you saw a couple of guys, Adam Party went after Daniel Carcillo. But I thought, guys, that didn't become a sideshow to the game, because this game was important with, the five-game losing streak and only picking up 1 point. Out of 10 points going into the game, and unfortunately they obviously didn't get 2 points, but I thought that was important. Richie, this game, it could have gone either way, and it was fairly even. The Jets really struggled. I thought they came on in the third. I thought in the second period was the worst period out of the three, and on the overtime goal, which we'll get into, it's unfortunate, but you really saw Patrick Kane's skill. Patrick Kane's probably going to, set career marks here for points. He's third or fourth in the league in scoring right now. You really saw his skill on display. We've seen his skill on display before, but I really thought he deserved to be the first star in this game.
I would agree with that assessment. I mean, he was the most dynamic player, I thought, for the Blackhawks. I thought, you know, Marian Hossa and Jonathan Toews weren't really noticeable, especially last night. I mean, you know, the Jets did a nice job of shutting down the powerhouse Blackhawks. They just couldn't get much going on the offensive side themselves.
Well, Rich, this team's having troubles right now. I mean, this Chicago Blackhawks team, I think, is a step below the St. Louis Blues, Nashville Predators, and Anaheim Ducks right now. I really do. And I was surprised. At the beginning of the season, I was thinking I wouldn't be shocked if the Western Conference Final was Chicago and L.A. again. And I think you've seen Chicago and L.A. step back. You've seen Chicago lose a defenseman, a significant defenseman in Nick Leddy. You've seen L.A. lose a significant defenseman in Slava Voynov. This Chicago team coming into last night's game, Richie, had been shut out two games in a row. So they're not scoring goals like they would. And, you know, Jonathan Toews is still a world-class player. But they're having their own issues. You know, they're not at their peak form yet, and you've still got a couple months here before the playoffs start. But this Chicago Blackhawks team is not firing on all cylinders like we're used to seeing them.
David Rumblad plays 3 minutes and 50 seconds last night.
So they're playing 5D for the entirety of the game in that case.
They were shuffling 5D, and in truth, the matchups ended up being pretty favorable for them, because when you're cutting out Rumblad, you're playing your guys more. But, you know, they're matching Seabrook with Keith and Seabrook with Chalmerson and Odio with Roosevelt and Keith with Rose. You know, they mix and matched a lot.
Yeah.
But David Rumblad played 3 minutes, 50 seconds. And guess how many goals he was on for?
One.
Yeah.
The only goal that Scheifele goal for the Jets.
Which he wasn't able to handle the forecheck. So,
which he's a soft defenseman, so it's not. I mean, we saw last time the Jets played in Chicago, I believe it was Andrew Ladd came in and sort of Rumblad sort of Olayed him rather than taking the hit. And that ended up in a Jets goal as well.
So I would expect them to add somebody on the back end that can help. You know, it's not going to be a Van Riemsdyk. I don't think they're going to stay internal there. I think they're going to try and add somebody. It's not going to be overly expensive. You know, but you see Jordan Leopold, for example, and he's not the player he once was, but a guy who can move the puck and skate a bit. He's playing forward a bit for Columbus here. So a guy like that in a team that seems to be out of it could be had probably for a fifth. So I would expect Chicago to add somebody who can play in that top six. Needs to be a six, five or six. But I thought Chicago played that game last night on talent. Like, I thought that was a talent game. There wasn't much else to the game, if you know what I mean. Like, they're just skill level so high. They're able to play at that pace, and I think probably, if you want to say control the play, 55-45, I'd probably guess. But there wasn't a ton of heart. Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, Toews, or you mentioned Drew Toews and Hossa, not overly noticeable, if at all. But the Kane line was very good and sharp, and Brad Richards was all right. So they, you know, there's other teams with bigger concerns than them. And Corey Crawford's looked pretty solid. So overall, you know, the Jets played a solid game. If they play that way the rest of the way, considering the cushion they have, and I know some teams have games in hand behind them, but if they play that way, they should be okay to make the playoffs. Rick and I were going over it last night on the show. I don't think you're going to need any more than 95 to get in the playoffs this year. And even if you're looking at 95, the teams behind the Jets are going to have to play pretty well, like really, really well, to be able to make it.
That's right. I mean, I was thinking something similar. The Jets play that way. When I was exiting the arena last night, and I was there in my seats, not with you guys in the press box. When I was leaving the arena that way last night, I thought to myself, the Jets play like that more often than not, and that was very much what we had seen in the first half of the year from the Jets. Yeah. Tight checking, good gap control, et cetera, et cetera. They play like that more often than not. They're probably going to end up with points, if not victories. Yeah. You know, you play like that against Colorado on Sunday, and you should be fine. Let's get into the goals last night. The Jets opened the scoring at the 4:17 mark of the first period. It came off of a fortuitous bounce. Mark Scheifele with his eighth of the year.
To the side of the net, loose in the slot again, bounces off some skates, Bufflin comes back, takes it out of harm's way, skates to center and drives it in on a shoot-in. Crawford will throw it in toward the corner, Rumblad after it there, took a bump, it's picked up by Scheifele, moves in, shoots and scores! Bouncing puck, fortuitous bounce to Scheifele, and he walked in all alone, about 6 feet in front of the blue ice, and beat Crawford, and the Jets have opened up the scoring for the 33rd time this year. It's 1-0 Winnipeg.
Mark Scheifele, like I said, is eighth of the year, and that's a guy who's been snake bit in terms of scoring goals and really hasn't been playing very well for the last, you know, two, 3 weeks. Good for him to get on the board, and I thought he actually played a pretty good game for the Jets last night.
Well, I should say, I was really happy to see Mark Scheifele score his first goal. He had gone 10 games, Richie, without a goal before that, and I think that was only his second goal in 22, 23 games, something like that. So, you know, on the goal itself, you know, Richie touched on it before with David Rundblad. Mark Scheifele comes in there with the forecheck, and Matthew Perreault kind of tries to pick up the puck, and it kind of goes off of the ref there and bounces right to Scheifele, and it turns out that there's not anyone really around him, mm-hmm. and he roofs it over Corey Crawford. But, you know, I think, you know, with Mark Scheifele, he's been playing well. I think that he really has been snake bitten. He's hit posts, and he's done a lot of good things. I think a guy like Mark Scheifele, this goal could really help him start to open it up, and this could lead to, you know, because they need him, Richie, down the stretch to be scoring.
He played well last night. Him and Byfuglien, I thought, were particularly effective last night on this goal. I don't like what Byfuglien does on this goal. Actually, I don't like when Byfuglien dumps it in on a 2-on-2. Yeah, he's got the size to take that puck in on the rush. Mm-hmm. But he does anyways, and he gives it to Crawford. Crawford gives it to Rundblad. Rundblad gets forechecked by Scheifele, and the turnover, Perreault off skate, boom, to Scheifele, lucky bounce, and he goes top corner. Quick shot, which I like.
Yep.
Scheifele, I thought, as he is lately, hasn't scored, as you mentioned. Early in the year, he wasn't scoring, and he was generating more chances, as far as I'm concerned, than he has been lately. But yesterday was a good sign, skating well, and I thought Byfuglien played a particularly effective game up front, and I thought he fed off that a little bit. So that's a good sign for the Jets, and you know, you could say, although you're going to need him down the stretch here, which they do if they want to compete with the real good teams, but the teams that they're playing against aren't particular, you know, the teams that they're competing with right now. Like, he's scored 2 goals in the last 22, and they're still 6 points up,
right?
Whatever it is. So if they can get it from different places, and Perreault as a center playing wing, so scoring a ton, then they should be okay. But, you know, if they want to compete with the big-time guys, if they want to compete in a playoff series, he's got to play better than he has.
Sure, and if they want to compete in a playoff series, they need, you know, reinforcements beyond the top six forwards, and we'll get to that throughout the course of the show when we touch on the Evander Kane saga, of course. The Blackhawks tied it up at one goal apiece. Patrick Kane, he was the best Blackhawk forward, best Blackhawk player last night.
Best player.
Probably his best player, period.
Best player, period.
26th of the season, assist to Brad Richards and Patrick Sharp. It came at the 250 mark of the second period.
Takes a bump there from Thorburn, who finished his check, but Oduya gets it along the boards for Sharp. In toward the middle now, here's Kane. A partial break, moving in, a backhand shot, he scores! Patrick Kane walked through the neutral ice. Richards to Kane. He walked in all alone to the deke of the backhand, and we're tied at one.
Patrick Kane is just a wizard on the ice, and you saw it there, you know, with speed in space. You know, Michael Hutchinson tries for the poke check, because really you're damned if you do, damned if you don't as a goaltender when Patrick Kane's coming in on you more often than not.
Well, Richie, in that situation, you had Zach Bogosian, who was up the ice and out of position.
Well, I don't know, Izzy, if, again, that,
well, if you,
that goes by scheme, right? Like, do the right Jets want him on a breakout pass to seal that pass where Patrick Sharp is? And if they do, then the forward, who's Wheeler's, got to either pick off the pass cross ice or got to get back and back up Bogosian, which he does, but he doesn't cover for him properly. I don't love the pinch, because what's the benefit of it there? Like, you have to be so tight on your gaps there, but overall, you know, I don't know if Maurice is going to fault Bogosian for jumping more. Does he want him to be especially aggressive, and he's going to fault Wheeler for kind of being in no man's land?
Right, and exactly. That's exactly it, Richie. And the other part of that is that Blake Wheeler's kind of flat-footed. And Patrick Kane takes the pass from Brad Richards full stride, and Blake Wheeler, who obviously isn't a defenseman, skating kind of backwards, kind of getting set up, and he's not ready.
And Brian Little had Kane through the neutral zone, and Kane just beat him to the puck.
He just beat him. He beat him.
So Patrick Kane, too. Those three guys.
That's the type of situation that, because of the skill of Patrick Kane and Brad Richards, who, you know, he might not be the playmaker that he once was, but this is still a former Conn Smythe winner.
He's still a playmaker, just can't get there, but when you have him standing still making a pass,
exactly.
He's fine.
So that was a nice goal by the Chicago Blackhawks in the move. I mean, you know, Hutch goes for the poke check, and he did a pretty good job at that, you know, and he puts up crazy move. How many times have we seen Patrick Kane make moves like that? He makes it look easy.
Well, he can stick handle in a phone booth, you know, the old cliche, and I mean, it's true there. He's got such fantastic hands, and I mean, you know, he's a top five player in the league, probably top three player in the league for a reason.
I'll say this much, though. They've done a nice job.
Top three, Drew. Oh.
Well.
Big high praise.
I mean, I'm sure the argument can be made
Well, right, hey, right now
he's tied for the league lead in points.
Yeah. What, is he tied right now?
He's tied. He tied Voracek after getting two points last night.
Because he was in third before that, so I guess Voracek has slipped a little.
He's got 58 points, 26 goals and 32 assists for 58 points.
Yeah, so
same number. Patrick Kane. Top three is a little high for me, but I like Patrick Kane.
Okay, well, I mean, fine. Top five, are you going to disagree with top five?
Yeah. Top 10, I'd say.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. It's you know, bar. It's a bar stool argument where there's no right or wrong answer.
If you simplify that, guys, to the most skilled player, I think maybe then you're getting into top three, top skilled offensive player. Then I think you have an argument there. I still think Jonathan Toews is the best all-around player in the league. So getting back to that goal, though, I think, you know, that's a situation where the Winnipeg Jets, I thought, played a very structured game, the defensive type of structure, Richie, that they want to play. Mm-hmm. For example, you got St. Louis coming up four times, right?
Yeah.
You want to play like that against St. Louis,
for sure.
Because you consider Vladimir Tarasenko is just ripping the NHL apart right now, and they have other guys on that team that can score as well. You want to play like this, but in that situation, there's not much you can do. A guy like Patrick Kane, all you can do is really limit how many points he's going to get in the game.
Different type of game against St. Louis, right? I mean, you're talking speed in the Chicago game and skating with them, which the Jets are able to do against St. Louis, and the Jets are heavy.
Yeah.
But St. Louis is deeper.
Yep.
So it makes an interesting challenge.
That's right. So it's 1-1 after 40 minutes. There's no scoring in the third period, so we're going to head to overtime. Before we talk about the overtime winner, you know, no penalties for the Jets in this game, except for the one that Wheeler took in the first period.
Yeah, I got to give him credit for that.
You know, and the offsetting ones in the third period. So, I mean,
don't matter.
No, those don't matter. Offsetting is offsetting. You know, so they really did sort of, they were more disciplined last night than we'd seen in the last really five or six games.
That's called a good game, too.
And that's important. I was just going to say, you know, that's important. They're most penal team in the league. We've talked about this for months now. You got to give them credit here. They did, aside from, you know, a couple of incidents, and the Thorpes fight and Carcillo fight doesn't count because you wanted to
see. If it's offsetting, it doesn't count.
No, it's offsetting, doesn't count. They didn't do anything stupid. There wasn't tripping penalties and boarding penalties and all that stuff. So that was a positive for the Jets last night.
I would agree with that. The Blackhawks scored the OT winner 3:01 into overtime. The Jets had actually controlled the first couple minutes of overtime. This is the first Blackhawks extended pressure, and they end up getting the winner here. Brandon Saad with his 16th of the year assist to Patrick Kane and Michael Roosevelt.
Roosevelt now for Saad, curls off the boards, high slot for Kane. Kane moving in. Kane doesn't shoot, hit by the net, wrap around, out in front for Saad, a shot, they score. Chicago wins the hockey game on a great play by Patrick Kane, who factors into both goals. And Chicago will not go winless against Winnipeg this year. They win it 2-1 in overtime tonight.
You know, obviously a good victory for the Blackhawks, getting the win in Winnipeg. But from a Jets fan's perspective, and we'll, you know, talk about the goal as well, from a Jets fan's perspective, you're not at all really upset with how this game ends, I think, last night and the performance of the team.
Well, you're upset, Drew, because you didn't get the full 2 points. But I think more so what you're saying is you're not upset with the effort level.
That's right.
And
they look like the team they're supposed to look like for one of the first times since the All-Star break.
If you watched that game, you were at that game or you watched it on TV, Richie, it was a coin flip. That could have gone either way. That was your typical playoff game that goes to overtime, and it can go, I mean, and one team didn't really control the plays. Sure, Chicago controlled the second, but for the most part, that was a pretty even game. And Brian Little really has an unfortunate end to this game, because, you know, Brian Little has that chance right before Brandon Saad scores, and then Brian Little on the back check kind of follows Kane Richie around the net a little bit, and then Bogosian comes in and then tries to trap him behind the net, and then Little kind of gets tied up with Enstrom and Roosevelt in front
of
the net there.
It was a pick there.
So, I mean, it was one of those goals where just, you know, assignments were missed there. You know, Kane makes a nice pass to Saad, who's been hot as of late, and that's the game.
The Jets usually play very well at 4-on-4. They're able to carry the play a lot of the time. And Drew mentioned that they were able to carry it earlier in the overtime. But you don't want to be 4-on-4 against Chicago.
No.
I mean, and Kane was able to – and what Kane does there is he's able to – Saad gets him the puck, I believe it was, and Kane circles the net. And when he circles the net, he's using the net as leverage and to give himself a little bit of space against Little. Little, when he goes to chase him – what happens is there's a pick by Roosevelt, as you just mentioned, who's driving the net. That's really important. People don't talk about that. Saad, Kane, Saad. But Roosevelt driving the net occupies Enstrom, ends up blocking Little. Bogosian ends up switching with Little to cover Kane. But Kane, when you switch, it's like basketball. When you switch off of a guy like Kane, that half a second is the amount of time he needs to make a play. As soon as he makes that play, Little, who's being blocked by Roosevelt, is now trying to cover Saad, who's cutting into the middle, isn't able to get there in time, and Saad puts it in. So it's good execution by the Chicago Blackhawks there.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jets end up losing. It's their sixth loss in a row, but you want to look at the glass half full. You can say that they've earned points in two of those in two straight games as well. They now have a 7-point lead on Colorado for the in terms of the wild card playoffs, and they're still 3 points up in Vancouver. Both teams have games in hand. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about last night's game, looking at some individual player performances, and talk about the Jets' defensive pairings and forward lines. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
It's interesting theme music there coming in. Remus, is that Heroes from Wallflowers or Bowie? Wallflowers, eh?
Yeah. You could be a hero. Anyways, continuing on with last night's Jets Blackhawks game.
Did we see the Wallflowers in New York City?
We did.
I thought you saw the Counting Crows.
We also ate at a deli, but it wasn't Bernstein's.
That was
deli.
Wallflowers, Counting Crows, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, it was a joint. Okay, sorry.
It was a fantastic concert. Hammerstein Ballroom?
Yeah.
It was great. It was. I'm used to dancing in a ballroom, but to see a concert there, it was fantastic.
Good to know. Last night's performance by the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, the new defensive pairings with Bufflin moved up to forward. The new forward groups with Evander Kane getting shoulder surgery. How did you think the Jets performed last night, you know, on the revamped lines? And did any players jump out at you in particular? From my perspective, up in the 300 level, I thought Zach Bogosian had a great game on defense.
I would disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah. Well, let's talk forwards first. Bufflin and Scheifele were the best forwards last night in terms of creating opportunities. Perreault was okay. I thought Perreault simplified his game, I think, kind of as it went. I thought that was a good thing. I wonder if they, depending on if there's going to be any additions to this lineup, I'm wondering if you need to have a little bit of a switch here. And I'm almost thinking maybe you go Perreault centering Frolik and Thorburn. And then you go Lowry up with Scheifele and Bufflin. And that would move Lowry out of the middle. And I don't know if they want to do that. But Frolik right now playing on the left side also doesn't seem as effective. He's a left-handed shooting guy, but he plays the right side. And I think that you might want to swap him with Thorburn and play Thorburn on the left side just because Frolik's more important in terms of what he does than Thorburn. So there's a few things that I have some concerns about, Drew, but overall I thought Dustin Bufflin, for a guy who doesn't enjoy playing forward that much, I thought he was very effective yesterday. And throwing his weight around, skating well, creating chances. I mean, he could have a couple goals. I like the way he played. And I don't mind the fact that him moving up gives increased ice time to the likes of Jacob Trouba and Zach Bogosian. I don't like the fact that Zach Bogosian played more than Jacob Trouba last night. I would play Jacob Trouba more than Zach Bogosian, and I know
Bogosian 27-13, Jacob Trouba 24-01.
And I know that's somewhat a product of playing with Tobias Enstrom, and Rick and I talked about
that
post-game.
And no power plays for the Jets. Trouba would get some power play time.
Sure, but I mean, even strength time was 27-21.
Yeah.
And I know that it was a long, shorthanded shift there, about 1:40. But even so, to me, Jacob Trouba is the best defenseman on the team and needs to play more than Zach Bogosian. Zach Bogosian, Drew, you could argue, was somewhat responsible for both goals against and had some effective play, and he played a lot, but also, I think, gave it up a bit. So, I think a guy that has to be playing, because I think he plays better when he plays, You know, like, it's hard for a guy like him to play 15, 16 minutes a game. Having said that, to me, Jacob Trouba needs to be the guy they lean on. And if they're not going to play him as much because of Stewart, then put Trouba with Enstrom and just ride him.
Now, Richie, you mentioned you have some concerns. I have some major concerns here, and I realize that Paul Maurice has been put into a difficult situation with Evander Kane being out of the lineup the last two games, and now his season is over because he's getting the shoulder surgery. But, I mean, starting off with Dustin Byfuglien playing forward, you know, finally Dustin Byfuglien was settled into playing defense, and I realize that they have the luxury of being able to move Dustin Byfuglien up to forward, but I don't think this is a long-term solution for the rest of the season.
What's that? What's the solution then?
Well, I think to take your arguably after Trouba, your best defenseman, and take him out of a position in which he was excelling to fill another hole, I think is a problem, Richie. And, you know, you mentioned Michael Frolik. Michael Frolik and Matthew Perreault together on the wings have been excellent, you know, for the at least the last couple of months here. You know, Perreault struggled earlier in the season, and now you've moved Frolik off of that line, and I think, you know, let's be honest, Evander Kane was making that third line go with Adam Lowry and whether it was Hallischuk.
For sure.
So now that third line is, to me, is a little bit of a mismatch. Like, Thorbs is filling in.
That's what I mean. Like,
Thorbs is filling in there on the third line. Yeah. You ideally, you know, you probably want Thorbs back in the fourth line if he needs to.
For sure.
Right? So you to me, you've kind of like put Byfuglien in there. But to put Byfuglien in there, you've decided to not put him on the third line. You've decided to put him on the second line. But then that moves Frolik. So you've put Frolik, a versatile player there.
Byfuglien's better than Frolik, though.
Right, exactly. And he doesn't create offense. Frolik doesn't create offense like Byfuglien
does.
That's right. But Frolik and the Frolik, Shifley, Perreault line was their best line for a nice stretch there. Mm-hmm. So to me, I have major concerns. And Byfuglien, and now Sherratt, I don't think is as comfortable without Byfuglien. Like, to me, I'm just saying, are they going to go the next 28 games, Richie, with Byfuglien as forward? I mean, to me, it's kind of throwing off.
I don't think they have a choice, because Chevalier's not going to make more than two moves.
Two moves would be twice as many as he's ever made.
Right? So...
Well, to me, that he has to make a move for that
Even
exact reason.
Even if he does, but he adds a top nine forward,
just think about that.
When
in recent memory, I'm not saying Dustin Byfuglien is a Norris candidate, but you were hearing people talk about how well he was playing on defense. He could be in the Norris conversation.
And that's crazy talk, by the way. Let me just go on quickly about that.
But
Dustin Byfuglien played half the season as a defenseman, half the season as a forward, whatever it was. And let me tell you, he played really well on the back end. But the talk about the Norris Trophy is a joke.
Okay, but
because talking to Shea Weber and different guys here who dominate games, Drew Doughty, who dominate games for the entire season, to talk about him being in the Norris Trophy discussion is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, but Richie, the main point I was trying to make, I shouldn't have, that's not the main point, was that he was
playing well.
The point I was trying to make is that he was playing extremely well.
Yeah.
Right? So to take a guy who's playing extremely well and is more comfortable on defense, all I'm saying is I think that is something that is not ideal. And I realize losing Kane is not ideal, but I think that just moving Buff up to forward, thinking that is your solution, when really you need to bring in a top six forward. To me, that's what you need to do.
Well, sure. But again, I just don't see that happening. I think a top nine would be more reasonable to expect based upon the GM and his activity thus far. The irony is not lost on anybody, I don't think, in this room, that the incident took place and results in Byfuglien moving back up to forward.
Sure. I'm just quickly, Drew, I know we're up against the break here. I actually was watching Byfuglien yesterday and forgot that he was back up and forward because he's flip-flopped so much.
And they still get to
put him on
defense on the back. They get to put him on the back end on the power play. So I get. They have the same hole they had before, a top nine forward. I mean, you're going to say Byfuglien, Kane, effective, not effective. Kane doesn't make... Kane can drive the play forward, sure. Byfuglien makes his teammates better. I don't know. I mean, you see it for a longer period of time. I still think they have the same need. I mean, sure, they're, and then on the back end, they have that hole now, but that hasn't really seemed to be an issue all year. But they still need a forward. You can get one. Not going to be that expensive. And you don't need that. Again, so I said to Rick last night on I think it was a pregame show, they just need a forward who's better than Gagliardi and Thorbert. Gagliardi played almost 11 minutes last night, and nobody claimed him on waivers, I think twice this year. You need a player who's better than a guy who's gone on waivers twice to play ahead of him. That's what you need. You don't need, you know, you don't need Chris Stewart or any of these. You need somebody, and they're available.
We'll talk more about it throughout the course of the entire program. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we'll bring in Mike Chambers from the Denver Post to talk about tomorrow's Jets-Avs game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're back on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Understand we've run into a little hiccup with Mike Chambers, so we'll have him on a little bit later on in the program. In the meantime, let's talk about tomorrow night's Jets-Avs game and how you think that's going to play out. Obviously, the Avs are chasing the Jets for... In the wild card standings, currently 7 points behind the Jets with 2 games in hand, one of which they'll make up tonight in Minnesota as the Avs and the Wild play in St. Paul later on this evening. You know, are the Avs, to your mind, are they really a threat to the Jets? Do you think that they're going to end up falling off the wild card chase in the Western Conference?
Well, I mean, Drew, I think that you would have thought by now they would have. So let's qualify by saying that, right? I mean, you would have thought, okay, this team is fading away. They just don't have the defense, in which they really didn't last year. But it's their top-end skill. I'm surprised that Colorado has hung around. And you look at where they are in the standings, Drew. The Colorado Avalanche are only 7 points behind the Jets with 2 games in hand. Okay, and you think to yourself, oh, that's not really that much. And you know, that isn't that close. You know, this game tomorrow, obviously, that shows you how important tomorrow's game is. Huge game. But if you look at Colorado and their point production, see, that's the surprising part to me, because it's not as if a guy like Nathan MacKinnon has come on. He has 29 points in 52 games. Landeskog's got 31 and 52. So their leading scorers right now are Alex Tangay and Jerome McGinley. This isn't the 2003 Calgary Flames here, or 2006 Calgary Flames, whatever it was. You know, I mean, if their two highest scoring players are Tangay and McGinley, and goaltending's obviously been a factor here, but I would be a little scared of the Avs because of this. The guys I mentioned, the young talent I just mentioned, and Ryan O'Reilly's in there too, 29 points, 52 games. Those guys haven't peaked, haven't even gotten close to peaking. So if they suddenly say, you can even throw Matt Duchene in there, 31 points, 52. All those guys, if they suddenly boom, and again, at this point, probably not going to happen, but if it were to happen, and they go on a scoring rampage, sure, their defense doesn't need to be as good.
The Avs are 2-1-1 since the All-Star break. They lost at home on Tuesday to the Detroit Red Wings.
And then in that game, which I watched, I mean, they didn't really control much of the play.
They lost 3-0.
Yeah, and Detroit controlled a fair amount of the play. I caught the second half of the game. So a team like Detroit causes trouble for them, right? Because they like to go on the rush Colorado a lot, and Detroit doesn't really give you the puck, and they have a lot of speed to take away space. So that's not a great matchup for Colorado.
Richie, I think you really nailed it, though, when you mentioned, let's be honest, the Colorado Avalanche have been playing catch-up the entire season. As opposed to last year, we talked to Brian Engblom about this back in December, when the Colorado Avalanche were really struggling and starting to fall out of the playoff race. He mentioned, Brian Engblom, that is, he mentioned that Colorado got off to that hot start, 12 out of the first 14 games they won? So they got off to that hot start and kind of rode that wave the entire year. This year, the Colorado Avalanche didn't get off to a hot start. They've had some struggles. You know, Richie mentioned, right now Alex Tangay and Jerome McGinley are leading them in points. Gabriel Landeskog, their captain, has really struggled this year. Nathan MacKinnon, call it a sophomore slump, whatever. He started off the season, guys, if you remember, not having scored a goal. I forget what it was exactly. It was something like 16, 17 games. And really, I feel like they have almost struggled to get back to where they were last year. when they won the division and went to the playoffs. So you're talking about a team who's getting better goaltending. The defense, as we've talked about earlier on in the season, you know, is probably their weak spot. But you've seen that they've had depth issues. And, you know, a guy like Tyson Barrie, their best offensive defenseman, you know, he's been injured and he probably won't be back tonight or tomorrow.
Out of the lineup against Detroit on Tuesday, Patrick Roy expected him to play tonight in Minnesota against the Wild. He did not take any of the pregame skate.
Right.
So it's unlikely that he's going to play, obviously, tonight in St. Paul. He is on the road trip, so we'll have to see if he's going to be in the lineup against the Jets tomorrow, which you probably won't know until right up against close to game time tomorrow, because there won't be a game day skate tomorrow with the second half of the back-to-back and the early 5 o'clock start time.
Right, Drew. And a guy like Tyson Barrie, you know, not only is he their best offensive defenseman, but he's their best puck-rushing defenseman. And, you know, for this team, not just tonight versus the Wild and tomorrow night versus the Jets, they need him for the stretch night. If they have any chance, a guy like Tyson Barrie's got to be in the lineup and healthy for them. And I guess he should be back soon. But, you know, you look at their schedule here, you know, just taking a look at their schedule, and the Avalanche do have the luxury of six of their next 7 games are at home. They've got some tough games in there against the Rangers, and you've got the Stars who are also competing for a playoff spot. You've got, you know, the Lightning coming in. So they've got a lot of home games coming up here in February. But there aren't a lot of easy games there for the Avalanche. So to me, Richie, the Avalanche are still a long shot
to
catch up.
But they're
not out of it. And if they can pick up a win against the Wild and you know, then give the Jets a run for their money, then that's going to go a long way. But you know, if you lose tonight against the Wild and you don't win against the Jets, then you're making it very difficult for yourself.
If the Jets get passed by Colorado, that's all in the Jets. I mean, you look at Colorado, their bottom six is terrible forwards. Their defense is terrible with Tyson Barrie. It's really terrible without Tyson Barrie. Their goaltending is obviously good, and their top-end skill level is good, but the top-end performance hasn't been great. You know that O'Reilly right now, you catch last game, O'Reilly's playing with the guys I mentioned, McKinnon.
Yeah.
And Landeskog. I mean, that's a line of guys who haven't performed this year. So, again, if they get off and they start scoring, then you can kind of get back to that formula of last year. But good coaching job here by Patrick Watt, and I have this team pack it in because they were pretty far out of it there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say, oh, based on the circumstances, this team, you know, another pick, and they need to sign some more free agents and figure out the O'Reilly thing. But there's could have been distractions there, and I give Patrick Watt credit because, you know, it hasn't been you know, all wine and roses this second season behind the bench.
If you look at it strictly by wins in the Western Conference, they've got the fourth least number of wins in the Western Conference. The bulk of their points, or they're getting a lot of overtime defeats, you know, or overtime and shootout defeats, where they've earned 11 points in those games. The Jets, of course, have 10, so they're the third most, the Jets. The Kings lead the Western Conference with 12. So the Avs aren't winning a lot of clean games.
You got to mention, too, though, that they have 2 games in hand.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not taking away from what you're saying. I'm just saying they do have 2 games in hand on the Jets.
Sure, they do definitely do have 2 games in hand still on the Winnipeg Jets. But you look at the Avalanche, and you mentioned their bottom six is nothing to write home about. Their defense is nothing to write home about. This should be a game tomorrow that the Winnipeg Jets, having, you know, lost 6 games in a row, having come off a solid performance against the Blackhawks, having the visiting team coming in on the second half of a back-to-back,
right.
This should be a game that the Jets should be able to handle the Avalanche tomorrow night.
Yeah, this is a game, exactly, Drew, that you got to win. No question about it.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. You know, you're playing a team that's top-heavy, coming in, playing the night before. Again, I think that's probably, we sometimes overstate that, but there is travel here. And
it's an early start. It's not like, you know,
it's a 5 o'clock start. You're right, Drew. And you know, a Jets team that has some depth issues themselves at forward, again, playing against a team that has depth issues themselves as well. So you don't really lose anything there. You know, against Chicago, you're losing on the third and fourth lines.
Mm-hmm.
Against some of the other teams that are playing Dallas, like, you're losing on the third and fourth lines, in my opinion. Here, you're not. So, you know, again, also matchup-wise, you know, you don't have Bufflin back there, so you're kind of going top four heavy. Well, the Avalanche only have 2 lines that are scary in terms of scoring, and you should be fine top four heavy. So the matchup's not bad. I wonder who the Jets are going to start here. I don't think they've announced that yet, have they?
No, the Jets are actually skating right now at MTS Center, so if we hear any news from that, from the skate this morning, I would think it would be Pavlik for the Jets. Do you not? You wouldn't think so?
Well, if we're talking about the Paul Maurice rotation system, then it would probably be Andre Pavlik, even though Hutchinson got 3 starts in a row before Pavlik got his last start. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, the betting man would pick Andre Pavlik. I thought Hutchinson was excellent again last night. I mean, neither goal I thought was Hutchinson's fault. But, you know, just quickly, Drew, on the Avalanche, I know you want to go to break here. You know, we'll have a chance later on in the show to talk to Mike Chambers about this. But we haven't mentioned Eric Johnson is out with a knee injury right
sure.
now. And he's been out for 2 weeks now.
That's what I mean. Their defense is awful.
Right? Like, yeah. And Eric Johnson, in addition to Tyson Barrie.
So only two defensemen who are really quality guys.
You know, it's good for a guy like Zach Redmond.
Jan Hayda is a good stay-at-home
guy. Zach Redmond right now can't play top 2 minutes right now, Richie. And again, I'm a big Zach Redmond fan.
Can he play top 6 minutes?
Seriously. I like his skating. So.
He wouldn't be in the top six of the Winnipeg Jets right now.
No, he wouldn't.
I mean, so, you know, I think Jets fans made a lot about Zach Redmond. You know, and of course, they had the incident in Carolina.
You always
and everything
make
else.
Most of the. No, of course, you obviously wish him the best for that, but you always make the most of the guys you never see.
Right. And the fact that he's not playing, that's a very good way of putting it, Richard. Yeah. If the Avalanche were healthy and were a good defense, would he be in their lineup? Probably not. Anyways, let's head to break. We'll have more on the Jets and the Avs later on in the program. When we come back, we begin to shift our focus to the Evander Kane saga for the next, give or take, 75 minutes. We'll talk about that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Well, a couple of things worth noting here, and I just sent something out to be posted on TSN.ca. Should be up there momentarily, but a couple of things. Number one, I think this is an ongoing saga that's been going on for years. A round peg in a square hole, if you'll pardon the bad pun, with Evander Kane and the Winnipeg Jets. It's not the first time there have been problems, and I suspect if they don't get addressed, it might not be the last. So that's number one.
TSN's Bob McKenzie discussing the Evander Kane saga, which we will now spend the next 75 or so minutes discussing. A reminder, 2:30 p.m., we open up the phone lines to you to hear your opinion on what's going on there. Who is to blame in your mind for everything that's happened between the Winnipeg Jets and Evander Kane this week? That's 2:30 p.m., 204-780-1290. If you want to reach us via Twitter right now, it's at Illegal Curve on the Tweet Machine. So, gentlemen, we start with the Monday night game in Calgary where everything seems hunky-dory. Aside from the result, the Winnipeg Jets, of course, losing to the Calgary Flames. Head into Vancouver Tuesday, Evander Kane's hometown. First visit for the Jets to Vancouver this season. Mm-hmm. And no morning skate, as is usually the case when you play back-to-backs like that. Jets are going to get together for a team meeting at the arena. Evander Kane shows up. Wearing a tracksuit, which is in violation of team rule. The veterans on the team, namely Dustin Byfuglien in this case, objects to the choice of attire made by Mr. Kane.
It's all alleged, right?
Alleged, but this is pretty well-established fact at this point in time. Dustin Byfuglien takes the tracksuit and puts it either into the shower or into the cold tub or whatever. Evander doesn't appreciate how his clothing is treated. There's a blow-up of some sort. Long story short, that night, close enough to game time, he's not on the bus, either of the two buses, to get to the arena, which isn't in and of itself a problem, as he's welcome to take his own transportation to the game. It's getting close to game time. There is no sign of Evander Kane. Now, this is in dispute that the team either contacts him and he says, I'm not playing, or the team contacts him, he's on his way to the arena in a cab, and the team tells him to turn around and go back to the hotel. You're not playing in the game. Everything blows up. He's a healthy scratch. You know, the story eventually leaks out what happened between him and Dustin Byfuglien, and it's announced, you know, they put him on IR. As a result, because of the shoulder problem, giving them a week to sort of make a decision, comes back to Winnipeg, gets an MRI, and it's determined he needs season-ending shoulder surgery and he's out for 4 to 6 months. It's the latest in a number of sagas for Evander Kane. You know, just start with Tuesday, and I mean, you know, how appropriate or inappropriate is the response to you know, his choice of attire, because I guess that's where this whole thing starts.
Okay, so Evander Kane, comes to the rink on Tuesday in Vancouver, allegedly wearing a tracksuit. The team, particularly, it appears, allegedly, is Dustin Byfuglien. I'm just saying all this is alleged, okay, instead of qualifying it each time. Dustin Byfuglien takes issue with the fact that he's wearing a tracksuit, or wore a tracksuit, in violation of team rules, and puts it in the ice bath or the shower. Does anyone believe that this was the first time something like this happened, and Dustin Byfuglien seems to be a pretty mild-mannered guy, mm-hmm. we don't know for sure, but seems to be, if this is the first time anything with Evander Kane had happened, that he would react this way?
No.
And if it was the first time that something like this had happened and he'd react this way, you'd assume it'd probably be more of a joke.
Sure.
So we can probably assume that there have been issues in the past. We've heard a few of them, heard of a few of the alleged incidents that have happened in the past to make one believe that this was more of a message sending than anything else.
Than practical joking. I heard a lot of people say practical joke this week. If I play a practical joke on one of you two, if I cut your shoelaces or if I throw your stuff into the shower, you guys are going to take it as a practical joke because we're buddies. If, given the reaction that occurred by Evander Kane, it's safe to assume that he didn't take it as a comedic attempt.
Well, hold on. Let's break down even further, okay? Let's go step by step. So if you think it happened, this is the first time, it would be surprising that the reaction would be as it has been. Dustin Byfuglien being the one who apparently did this seems somewhat, it's not necessarily say out of character, guys won a cup and all that stuff before, but you know, is he one of the more vocal guys? Doesn't appear to be.
Not publicly, at least.
So, sending a message that way too. If you want to read even deeper into it, are the players not only sending a message to Evander Kane through Dustin Byfuglien? You don't know if the players were consulted. He consulted with them before doing this. A certain amount, you know, a couple of them, none of them. Who knows? But are the players, through Dustin Byfuglien, asking this question rhetorically, sending a message to management to finally deal with the issues that have allegedly arisen over the past number of years?
Right, Richie, and that presupposes that this was thought out before. So, and I don't think it was. I think, you know, this is a joke that went wrong and Evander Kane took it the wrong way. And, you know, I really don't think that we know the whole story. I think we're getting parts of the story, you know, through various sources. I think, you know, if you're talking about practical jokes in the dressing room, I mean, we've all played hockey and sports and this stuff is common. I mean, you know, a guy has a good game. Pie in the face. That happens in baseball. But I'm saying stuff like this, more so, Richie, where, you know, you play a joke on a guy and, you know, you remember Major League, you put the pink slip on the on the locker. Stuff like that. I mean, it's sports, guys. It's fun. That's stuff right. like this happens all the time. I think that they did this probably not so much in that respect to have fun with him, but to say, okay, you know what, Evander? You're going to wear a tracksuit to our team meeting. Get your stuff together. You know, we'll put it in the shower. Let's go. Let's get back to winning here. I think that they were sending him a message. I don't really see the sending the management a message, Richie, but I can see why you're taking that angle. And I think
I'm not saying it's happened. I'm saying it's crossed my mind.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's why I'm saying I can understand why that's crossed your mind.
Because if you think this isn't the first incident, no. then it certainly has presented itself.
And sorry, but that goes back to what Bob McKenzie is saying. Mm-hmm. This isn't the first time Evander Kane's been a healthy scratch. This isn't the first time we've heard of discord with Evander Kane and other teammates. So, you know, maybe there is, you know, somewhat of a problem with Evander Kane in that dressing room. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Evander Kane is not well-liked by his teammates in that dressing room.
I think if this was a one-off incident or this is a minor incident, we probably don't really ever hear about this. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we think we know the majority of the details, and the fact that it became so public tells me that where there's smoke, there's fire. And in this instance, there's a lot of smoke that this is a player who is not well-liked by his teammates. I think his reaction shows that he knows he's not well-liked by his teammates. And, you know, you're going to say, is he bullied? I don't believe that he's bullied in the
I don't buy that.
In the traditional negative connotation sense of the word.
Yeah, I do not agree with the angle at all that he's bullied by his teammates here and Dustin Byfuglien, who's alleged to have thrown his tracksuit in the shower or the cold tub, is suddenly a bully or has been a bully, and he needs to be the one criticized. I completely disagree with that.
Yeah, this isn't Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin on the Miami Dolphins offensive line, as far as we know. And now maybe there's more to it, but I don't believe that there is. I believe this is a player in Evander Kane who put himself above the team or decided that he needs to do something contrary to team rules. And as a result...
Let me interrupt for a second, Drew. You would assume if he comes and he has followed team rules in the past for attire, he would then know team rules.
Sure. You would assume that he knows that if... Yeah. If this was not, the, you know, he would know what's appropriate and what's not appropriate.
Guys, everybody,
you show up to work, and if you're the only one wearing a tracksuit, any job, if you're the only one wearing a tracksuit, you know that it's inappropriate. Same thing if you show up to work and everybody else is in jeans and you're wearing a three-piece suit, you know that you're, you know, it's not standard with what's expected. Hey,
maybe
of
your
you.
First day of work.
Maybe your first day of work, something like that, and you learn your lesson. But you've been around the dressing room for four, five, 6 years. You know that if you're the only guy who's ever worn a tracksuit, I'm stepping out of bounds for whatever reason, and there might be some ramifications.
And again, to think it's just a tracksuit is clearly that's what the criticism has been of the Winnipeg Jets or whoever that story got out. I don't know. There's so many people talking about this, about the tracksuit being the issue. Clearly, that's not the issue, guys. I mean, if it was only a tracksuit on a one-off, then it wouldn't be a big deal.
I think the tracksuit is the least of what's going on here. The tracksuit just happens to be a symbol that breaking the dress code. And I think what has happened over the last few years here is that there have been a series of events that have happened, whether it's dating back to when he was benched in Toronto, and we still don't really know why that was. Maybe it was a curfew.
He broke a rule. He was late for a team function.
He broke a rule. So I don't want to, you know, pile on Evander Kane and all this, but I'm just saying this isn't the first time that he's had disciplinary issues with either Paul Maurice or Claude Noel.
People forget that he was benched for the first period in Boston. I'm trying to think if it was the first year the Jets were back or if it was the second year the Jets were back. So, you know, Claude Noel, obviously, there was the healthy scratch or injured controversy in Chicago a number of years ago with Claude Noel.
Threw Noel under the bus.
That's right, where he threw Noel under the bus. And even before that, there was he was benched for the first period in Boston for a situation we still don't know of to this day, and we probably will never know. So... You know, this isn't the first run-in he's obviously had with management and coaches and teammates, and it's obviously come to a head.
I think we got to throw in here, though, and I know we're going to spend another at least two or three segments on this before we take calls, Drew, but there's the whole element, and I heard Aaron Ward talking about this. Rick and Reem had him on. This stuff shouldn't ever leave the dressing room.
But hold on.
And people can say, hold on, I'm just making a point here. I'm just saying this stuff, to the fact that this got out to the media... Because I don't think the team wants anybody to hear about this stuff. Because this stuff happens all the time. And I'm not saying that's good. And I know people are going to say, you know, well, you know, this type of stuff. This is professional sports. These are athletes. Mm-hmm. Dressing rooms aren't, you know, they're not libraries. I mean, stuff goes on there. Guys, you know, get mad at each other. This is, you know, testosterone and all that stuff. Well, I'm just saying, I think that, you know, they didn't want this stuff going out. You got to wonder how did this get out? If it was a player, was it a player agent? Like,
well, it's only a player agent if it's a player.
Sure, the player tells it. You're right. And that's a very good question, and let's head to break.
And Mark Stewart is mad about that yesterday. And I understand he's mad about it and frustrated about it, and you can hear the tone in the pregame show. He played the audio.
Makes the whole team look bad, Rich.
Yeah, but again, the only guys who are in the room are the guys in the room. So if it's coming out of the room, somebody in the room's talking. It's not the media's fault that somebody talked about it. I mean, if you don't want it talked about, don't talk about it.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about where the blame lies for this issue. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Yeah, I think he is. You know, right now, I mean, I know you guys love this stuff, which is fine. You know, it's your job. But, and this isn't, I'm not trying to insult you guys, but you have no idea what goes on in this room. I mean, you may hear stories once in a while, but that's the way it should be. Things shouldn't be getting out. You know, stories are going to get out. You're going to hear some stuff, but the day-to-day and over the last, you know, 3-4 years, you guys really have no clue. So it's hard for you guys to make judgments.
Is that Blame It on the Rain playing underneath Mark Stewart's comments about Evander Kane?
Yes, we're discussing, Drew, who's to blame this on.
So I like that.
Blame it on the rain, Drew.
That's good.
Could you
blame it on the Kane?
I was going to say that.
Yeah, but you stumbled over your words.
You know what, Drew, we spend too much time together.
I stole your spotlight there. So, gentlemen, continuing on with our story about Evander Kane, and again, we remind you we're going to open up the calls at 2:30 this afternoon, so we can you can get your 2 cents in at 780-1290. If you're shy and you prefer to do it via Twitter, at Illegal Curve.
People on Twitter are really shy.
Maybe they're afraid we're going to demand that they use their real name on the radio as opposed to on Twitter where they can be anonymous.
If people are shy, Drew, do you want people to send messages via carrier pigeon?
I don't know. Can they?
You can train pigeons to send messages.
Okay.
Well, you can race pigeons too, actually.
I'll settle for people training you, and then we'll start with the pigeons
I can't be trained.
So the blame question, because this is obviously, you know, sort of one of the next natural steps in trying to assess this situation.
Yep.
Where does the blame lie here, Richard? If you had to rank the people who are to blame here, is Evander Kane number one on your list with a bullet?
Yeah, I mean, if based on these alleged incidents, if these have happened as they've been reported, then Evander Kane is to blame at the top of the list. He is, you know, he's brought this upon himself largely. If these reports are true, now I think that you start there, but I think you then move over to Kevin Cheveldayoff, because these are not these reports, and Bob McKenzie spoke about it. You know, it's been ongoing for a while, and if we know about it, and if we hear about it, you better believe that Kevin Cheveldayoff knows about everything that happens with this team and with his players. And if he knows, I'll put it this way, if he knows, which we know he does, and if we hear things, which some are true, you know, some can't be spoken of really, most of the league probably knows. Because put it this way, if it gets out of the room here in Vancouver, players up, they come through the junior ranks, the NCAA, they have buddies on different teams. You don't think players in the league chat? If players in the league talk, then what do you think happens, right? Players in the league talk, and then it gets out, and the longer time goes by, the more people know, and if it's an issue, and if his attitude or these different things are an issue, then his value continues to go down, or at least is static. So if you know these are issues and you haven't dealt with it or traded him and things are getting out and his value probably won't improve at all, even though you're hoping he gets that 35-40 goal season to be able to trade him, at some point you have to cut bait. You have to make a move. And Kevin Cheveldayoff, for my mind, waited too long.
I think, you know, I got to mention something here quickly, Drew. Tim Campbell, our friend who writes obviously for the Free Press, you know, wrote about this today, and I think this is a huge piece of the story here. I mean, the lead to the story is Evander Kane agent says the Winnipeg Jets left winger.
Did you say Evander Kane?
No, did I?
Yeah, you did.
Oh.
You're confusing Evander Kane with our friend on Twitter, Evander Kane.
Michael Young, good guy. Evander Kane's agent
said, that was amazing.
Well, you know, I have trouble reading, okay? It's not like I
and
went to university.
Differentiating fact from fiction, apparently.
Yeah. Evander Kane's agent says the Winnipeg Jets left winger, try not to laugh at me too much here, guys. Left winger, Kane and Cheveldayoff. Basically, Tim Campbell was talking in his article today about how Craig Oster and Kevin Cheveldayoff have talked about moving Evander Kane. And the quote is, it's something that Kevin and Evander have addressed multiple times in the past several years, and I'll leave it at that. So that basically, to me, tells me that we don't know how close the Jets were to trading Evander Kane, Richie. But does this not speak to that? That they were close to moving him at the draft or before the draft last year?
You know, closest doesn't matter. You get it done or you don't.
Well, but I'm just saying that if they've been trying to move him, then that speaks even to more that there were problems years ago.
which isn't news. I mean, I don't think it comes as any time, you know, for the last, was it two, three summers, Evander Kane goes on to the Vancouver radio station and they ask him how happy or unhappy he is in Winnipeg. And he always gives a non-answer when the opportunity is sitting for you. He could say, oh, Winnipeg's a great city, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think it was what, on Off the Record years ago when Michael Landsberg asked him, I think this was, I don't know if we have the audio.
Yeah, it was OTR.
The favorite, his favorite place, and Dave Manuk for LegalCurb.com saw this, you know, the what's your favorite place in Winnipeg? My condominium.
Yeah.
You know, these are backhanded shots, right?
This isn't news. He's obviously wanted out for a number of years. We've suspected so, if we haven't clearly known so. And you continue to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait because you think his asset's going to go up. But, you know, it hasn't, obviously. And I do think that
which is also contrary to the fact that he has, I mean, his less term would be less attractive asset, just so you know, in my opinion.
Well, sure. As the less number of years he's under contract for, the less appealing it is to other teams. That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff is, you know, waiting for the best offer, waiting. There's no guarantee that the best offer is around the corner or that you don't already have the best offer or that the offers are going to get better. I think that the fact you have a unhappy player in your dressing room, you have the rest of the team who is obviously unhappy with this player. They don't particularly like this player, one can surmise based on the events and based on the interactions we've seen on the ice and everything else. Mm-hmm. You can't just keep waiting without expecting a fair bit of the blame to land at your doorstep. The Jets are without two top 10 draft picks. Alex Burmistrov, who might be coming back supposedly, whether or not he's welcomed back or not.
Nobody knows that.
And nobody knows. And without Evander Kane. So you drafted Alex Burmistrov 8th overall. You drafted Evander Kane 4th overall.
Just to be specific, it wasn't him who drafted.
No, I know. I'm talking about the organization. I'm talking about the organization,
yes,
right? You know, this organization is without two top 10 picks. Think about, you know, any other organization that, you know, didn't strike out on those two picks right now. How much better would this team be? And there's a fair bit of blame to go around. And Dustin Byfuglien and is not innocent in all this. But in my rankings of who's to blame, Evander Kane's number one. And Kevin Cheveldayoff is not far behind at number two.
Right.
And Dustin Byfuglien. Let's get on Dustin Byfuglien thing for a second. You can expand on that. You say you don't think he's innocent.
I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Byfuglien.
I don't think he's completely innocent. I think a lot of people are blowing out of proportion what it means to throw a teammate's, you know. You talk to people who played in the NHL. And we'll talk to Jeff O'Neill coming up.
People get a lot. Any team.
Yeah. How does this kind of thing happen?
Hey guys, you hear?
So I don't blame Dustin Byfuglien at all. To be honest with you,
if
the alleged instance true, I don't blame Dustin Byfuglien at all.
You hear stories about. I mean, there's a pecking order in a dressing room, and Evander Kane's a younger player. Dustin Byfuglien, Andrew Ladd, Mark Stewart. These
just
guys,
like there is as an office, just like there is in any
absolutely.
Other dressing room.
So I mean, you know, this to me is just, you know, okay. We're you think you are going to do whatever you want here? We control the dressing room, and we're going to send you.
And
a little
I think
bit of a
we as Ian, is. The rest of the players,
Dustin,
not me. It's we, as you said.
Again, we don't know the whole story. We know parts of the story, and because, as Mark Stewart said, we're not in the dressing room. But to think that other incidents like this haven't happened—not just to Evander Kane, but other players—to think like this stuff doesn't go on all the time—you're naive.
I promise you, if you showed up to the dressing room and you were wearing a sweatsuit, and it was the first time you've ever worn a sweatsuit, the players are doing something similar to you. They're probably not letting you off scot-free simply because there's rules, and as a result, the rules are expected to be followed. Obviously, this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
See, that's what I think it is, Drew. Yeah. I think this was a joke that was played on Evander Kane. I do not think Dustin Byfuglien, you know, is some type of bully that's been bullying him for 2 years. I agree with Richie. I don't buy that angle at all. I think this was something that was blown out of proportion. Evander Kane right now, because he's been fighting through the injury... I think, you know, he took it the wrong way, and you know, he decided to leave on the team and miss the
he bailed
late for the game.
He bailed on his teammates. He quit on his teammates. Here's, you know, talking about incidents that happened in the locker room. Here's Shane Knighty talking about what they used to do to Chris Neal.
I don't buy this, upset over this. You know how many times my pants were cut or I chained and lockered? I was talking to Marian Hossa just seconds ago. We just joked about this. He says, I remember when we used to chain Chris Neal's pants and lock them in his locker all the time. This year, the Pittsburgh Penguins hung a couple guys' outfits from the ceiling, the rafters in the arena. This happens.
Hey, that's
Shane Knighty knows way more than we do about what happens in a dressing room.
That's the sheriff speaking.
Yeah, so, you know, if Evander Kane stuff was thrown in the shower, it's because he pushed the boundaries too far, the teammates responded, and he quit on his teammates.
We haven't got even to the details of the shoulder injury and all those things. We haven't even touched on that.
Right, and we'll get to it. This isn't going away anytime soon. But, I mean, there's so much more. There's so many more layers to this story. I mean, if he didn't quit on his teammates on Tuesday night in Vancouver, when all of a sudden he needed shoulder surgery, and I appreciate Craig Oster, Kane's agent, has to, you know, trot out the company line that he was in need of shoulder surgery, and this was the time to do it.
Well, I mean, again, do we know all the facts, Drew? No, but let's ask rhetorically. Was there an injury to speak of on the way? Was there an injury to speak of? I'm sure he's been playing injured. I mean, sure.
Well, I can tell you this much, Richie. He led all forwards in ice time and hits against Calgary. Does that, if a guy has a serious shoulder injury?
I don't know if he led him in hits in that game, but he led him in ice time for sure.
If you have a serious shoulder injury, are you? Well, he leads the Jets in hits.
I think for forwards, right?
Well, Lowry's up there. Bufflin's
up
there.
The point is, he plays a physical game on Monday night in Calgary, and all of a sudden on Tuesday, he needs shoulder surgery.
Well, no, yeah, that's right, Drew.
It's the final screw you to the organization.
Again, we're not saying that this is just, it's a little suspicious.
It's not a little suspicious. It's him saying, screw you. You're not going to be able to trade me for an asset this year. I'm never going to play for this team again. There's no way he ever plays for this team again. And not only can you not trade me now, but I'm going to go get surgery. You're going to have to continue to pay me. Screw you. You can't use me to improve your team over the entering the stretch drive.
He's opted for surgery when I think my opinion on this would be that many other players in the league in this room, in the dressing room, could opt for surgery as he did. I'll put it to you that way. And because these guys play hurt.
Sure.
And to Ezzy's point about hits and all that, if your shoulder, and Rick mentioned last night, if your shoulder is that damaged, you're probably not going to be playing the most physical game. Probably going to avoid the contact more so than not. And doesn't mean he didn't play hurt.
No,
doesn't mean that everybody else in that room doesn't play hurt right now.
Mm-hmm.
But opting for the surgery when you were, the optics of it, you were heading to the arena to play on Tuesday, jumpsuit or not, whatever the heck you were wearing, you were heading to play. There was no sign that you weren't playing. You were scratched on Tuesday, not due to injury, but due to coach's decision. And then an injury arises, which wasn't spoken of before.
And you need season-ending surgery.
And you need season-ending surgery, and you don't wait a little bit to determine whether or not that's absolutely necessary.
That's what I find also interesting. You know, they put him on the IR, retroactive. It gives the team a week to make a decision with him before he's eligible to play again.
Mm-hmm.
They could have said, give us till next Sunday to try and make a trade. And then if we can't make a trade by then he's welcome to opt for surgery at that point in time. Instead, he immediately went for surgery and said, screw you.
Has he had the surgery? Is that confirmed?
No, I mean, he's having the surgery. They said it's either today or tomorrow. So it's unlikely he's getting traded between today or tomorrow and all of a sudden doesn't need the surgery anymore. He could have waited a week, but he's obviously got no love lost for the organization. He's got no love lost for his teammates, and he's not willing to give Kevin Cheveldayoff the benefit of the doubt that a trade's going to happen because he's been asking for a trade for 2 or 3 years, and nothing's happened.
And it doesn't mean you have to give in to Evander Kane's alleged demands for a trade, Drew, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff. But you also owe it to the guys in the room to make a move at some point.
Sure.
It's not a favor or just giving in to Evander Kane's demands. It's for the best interests of the organization and the team taking action at some point.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the trade value of Evander Kane. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. There's nothing worse than unwanted surprises, like finding out your favorite player just got traded, or getting internet overage charges. But MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
He's a player now. You have to think that if you're going to take him, you have to have confidence that your internal leadership leadership mechanism in your room, and your coaching staff's going to find a way to appeal to him to make him want to buy into the team. I think that's one of the things. And some people will say, well, if he wants to be a player in the league, he has to have a buy-in. Well, yeah, he does, but different guys have different ways of accepting a buy-in. That's just the reality of doing business in pro sports today. It's not like it was 20 or 25 years ago or more than that. So you have to get creative as a management team. You have to understand as a coaching staff, maybe this player's a little bit different in terms of how he perceives himself. How can we make him best fit to our group? And if you're confident with your leadership mechanism within the confines of your...
Pierre McGuire talking about Evander Kane. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. I'm reliably informed tickets for Sean Wayans going like hotcakes. In case you missed it, Rumors is bringing in Sean Wayans coming up in April, I believe, of this year. So get your tickets quickly at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and online at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Does anybody realize the irony of Remus playing Fleetwood Mac, Go Your Own Way, then you reading a Rumors, having a Rumors read, which is the album, and then us talking about all of these rumors about...
it's all coming full circle there. That was actually... I never thought about the Rumors tie into Fleetwood Mac there, but that's pretty clever.
Drew is a big Stevie Nicks fan.
I do like Fleetwood Mac, but that's a separate issue altogether. Let's talk about the trade value of Evander Kane now. You know, obviously, if he's undergoing this shoulder surgery today or tomorrow, as we've been led to believe, there's no reason for the Jets to trade him before the trade deadline.
Oh, just if there's a good offer, then sure. But unless, I mean, there's no reason for a team to trade for him is what you probably mean.
That too. Yeah. There's no reason for a trade. Unless it's a team that's completely out of the race that wants to you know, get in on him nice and early. But I don't really foresee a reason for that occurring.
Yeah, the only reason I'd say is if they want their own doctors to do the surgery. That's sure. The only way I would see it. Otherwise, you wait till he's after a few months have gone by.
So, you know, we keep, you know, year after year after year, they're waiting for his trade value to go up, to go up, to go up. Is it possible his trade value is much lower than it is right now when they're going to have to trade him?
I don't think his value is as low as maybe some people think, but I don't think it's... This is what I think. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff had a certain value that he thought Evander Kane was worth. I don't think he was getting offers up to that level. I think that he was hoping/expecting for Kane's performance to improve, thereby giving, you know, teams an incentive to offer what Cheveldayoff was looking for, and I don't think that ever happened. So I think if you're looking for expectation-wise, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff likely won't ever get what he thought Kane was worth on the market, and I think his value might be diminished a tad, but I think at the end of the day, when you have a couple of teams who still think, you know, the ego, they still think that they can make this guy go, and certainly he can be an effective player, I don't think his value is as diminished as some may believe.
No, Richie, I would take that further, not that much further, obviously, because I'm agreeing with you, but I don't think Evander Kane's trade value has changed one bit after this incident. Not one bit. This year, because he's going to have season-ending shoulder surgery, that affects his trade value right now at the present moment. But if we're talking about next year, I mean, you're still talking about a guy that scored 30 goals in the NHL. Yeah. You're still talking about a guy whose combination of speed and physicality is extremely rare.
And shot.
I mean, Evander Kane, you know, this incident, you know, might have been, you know, he might have made a mistake here. And we all make mistakes. I've made many mistakes. I could write a novel on how many mistakes I've made. So I'm not an angel here. I'm serious. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, before this season started, I remember when we were previewing the season, and I truly believed that this was a clean slate year for Evander Kane. Because last year was a tough year for him, and he's had incidents since he came over from Atlanta to Winnipeg. And I said, I'm going to give him a clean slate. You know, this is the opportunity for Evander Kane to get back to the 30-goal season that he had the first year that the Jets were back in Winnipeg. And, you know, I thought, especially over the last 2 weeks, playing with Adam Lowry and Chris Thorburn, and then before that, Halaschuk was on the line, I actually thought Evander Kane was really setting the tone for the Jets in a lot of these games. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was playing really well. And so, you know, when you talk about, you know, if the Jets are going to decide to trade him, I still think I don't think there's 29 other teams in the NHL that want him. I think if you talk about Blake Wheeler or Jacob Trouba or Dustin Byfuglien, I think a lot more teams would want him.
Totally agree.
Because I think they look at Evander Kane, they say, oh, but Evander, you know, he's had some problems there in Winnipeg. We don't know if we want him, but I still think, you know, I would have to think that there's half a dozen to 10 teams that would still, I'm just throwing that out there, that I think would still want Evander Kane. You're talking, you know, we hear rumblings that the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Boston Bruins, mm-hmm. you know, Philadelphia Flyers apparently aren't interested in him, we hear. But, you know, you talk about that combination of size and speed and the opportunity for a fresh start. You know, they're talking about that in Toronto, Richie, with Dion Phaneuf. Like, if certain teams think, well, if we brought in Dion Phaneuf and he wasn't the number one defenseman, we put him on the second pair, we think Dion Phaneuf, a change of scenery. We've seen this time and time again. Tyler Seguin, perfect example.
Sure.
He goes from Boston to Dallas and has a career year. I'm just saying, I still think that Evander Kane is an excellent hockey player and teams would want his services.
What can the Jets expect in return for Evander Kane at this point in time? You know, you mentioned Tyler Seguin. He was traded, obviously, to Dallas.
That was a big package deal, Drew. He's not going to, I mean,
yeah,
he's not, first off,
he's not Tyler Seguin by any stretch.
Evander Kane is no Tyler Seguin, so let's qualify it there.
Right.
He's probably going to get a young top six forward, probably with less skill than he has, and a prospect or a pick with that. But it's not going to be that 3-4 pack, you know, player pick combination deal that I think Kevin Cheveldayoff probably was looking for.
Is he getting you Riley Smith and a second round draft pick?
Yeah, something like that. That's
he's not getting Louis Erickson thrown in there too.
No, but a veteran guy that they wouldn't want. But that's the idea, Drew. Yeah, so that
he's
kind
getting,
of a player.
You know, an up and coming guy who's already, you know, cracked the lineup, lineup. Yeah, yeah. And we're just using him as an example.
Yeah,
we haven't heard that Boston's the clubhouse leader by any stretch or anything.
Right.
You know, or you know, Pittsburgh's mentioned, you know, Brandon Sutter and a draft pick or something.
No, more than that.
I don't know if they want to trade Brandon Sutter, but
like a Braden Chen, Riley Smith type.
Sure. Okay. So you're getting somebody like that. So you're taking a fourth overall draft pick
who cares where he was drafted? So many guys. Jacob Trouba's drafted now. You know, for the first, who cares about that?
Fine, but a guy who, when the Jets moved back here, you thought was a building block and a difference maker for a guy who's probably is Riley Smith. You know, Riley Smith's probably, his ceiling is probably a top six player on an team and a top nine player on a very good team.
And again, you don't want to get fixated on specifically Riley Smith. Riley Smith had 51 points last year. I mean, he's a good young winger. I mean, mm-hmm. but I think the point Richie's trying to make is, you know, he'll get a tops. It'll be tough, I think, Richie, to trade him straight up for someone. Those are tough trades to make. You know, trading Evander Kane for someone who's exactly like Evander Kane.
And the only reason you're getting him is if there's issues.
And I don't think that trade's out there. I think the point here is there isn't an ideal trade. I think the point Richie's trying to make is you're going to get a top six forward, most likely a young forward, maybe a veteran, a guy that's a little bit older, and possibly throw in a draft pick because mm-hmm. that player is a little bit of lesser quality than Evander Kane. But I think the point you're trying to make, this isn't going to be a Joe Thornton trade where you get three forwards and, you know, or a Tyler Seguin where you get...
That was a terrible trade, though.
Yeah. No,
Wayne Primo, Marcus Sturm, and Brad Stewart.
Evander Kane is not a top 20 forward in the NHL.
No, exactly.
And Seguin and Thornton were top 20 forwards in the NHL. So you're talking about a guy who's a great forward.
Seguin wasn't then, but expected to be there.
Let me ask you guys this question quickly, because we're going to bring in Jeff O'Neill coming up after the break. Had Kevin Cheveldayoff made this trade a year or 2 years ago when it was first rumored that Evander Kane had requested and it seemed like he didn't really want to be here, how much more would he have gotten on the trade market at that point in time than he would today?
Well, higher draft pick than we'd be talking about or another player added in there. So, like, you know, for example, you mentioned Riley Smith, and say a second rounder would have been some other young, I think, prospect added in there. Or alternatively, a first-round pick and not the prospect, something like that. So it's been diminished that way.
I heard the Jets might be trading Evander Kane for Chad Kilger and Oleg Tavernoff.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Jeff O'Neill to talk more about the Evander Kane saga from a former player's perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.